exciting episode of Video Game Bang. Video Game Bang. Your weekly source for all things video game. Featuring your fearless hosts, Corey Vincent.
I'm pretty much Microsoft and Marvel. The cans are on. It's when ish gets real.
I don't get shot during the day.
And Aaron Carter.
Buy the armor, I equip it, and it's like Pink Thong. The guy that delivers vending machine items in my job. He can play the Rhino.
Fill up your Mountain Dew and grab your Doritos. It's time for Video Game Bang.
The thirst is absolutely real, everybody. I am Sir Aaron Carter, and you are listening to The Weekend Bang, powered by NRG. Let's get some sponsors out the way. Of course, Oblivion Comics and Coffee. Come for the comics, stay for the coffee. They're one of our sponsors. Antlion Audio. Keep your headphones. Get a mod mic. And Mainframe USA, the new guys to the block, right?
New guys to the block.
And
Insane the block. In the Mainframe.
There we go. That's a good one.
Well, Steven came up with it two weeks
that's
ago.
True. That's right.
Did he really?
Yeah, brilliant.
We forgot about that on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mainframe USA, Insane in the Mainframe. we got a whopper of a show.
I'll take credit.
Oh, you're going to take credit for
sure.
Him?
No, fuck Steven. He didn't do it. I did it.
We're in the suing age, sir. We got a new president. It's all about suing.
That's true.
So you better be careful. On the show, of course, mine's the 1-2. Corey Vincent.
What's up, pizzas? What's going on? I'm back.
Have you been watching everything in the media today?
I've been watching stuff in esports.
Oh, okay.
Nairo's in Top 32.
Top 32.
Going strong at Genesis 4 tomorrow. And our new look for the CSGO team, NRG's new CSGO team, is undefeated. They went 3-0 today.
Nice.
3 points in the
Wasn't
bag.
On stream, so there's no proof, but you just have to take my word for it.
All right.
Take my word for it.
And, of course, we have the real David Webb is here.
What's going on, everybody?
Have you been keeping up what's up in the media today?
No, I've been trying to raise my skill level.
Your API?
Overwatch.
Okay.
Yeah, it's time to raise my API.
And then special guests on the show today. We have the group from, and I'm saying this wrong, please correct me, because it's like... It's a new word, I'm thinking, right? Nexcra?
It's a made-up word.
Okay. So Nexcra Games?
Nexcra Software,
thank you. We have Sam Silva, who's the marketing and writing, right? In marketing and writing.
Also sharing a camera with Aaron.
Yeah, if you're watching live, of course, on Twitch.tv.
No, those aren't real glasses on his face. If you're watching on the stream, it's one of those, it's like a Snapchat filter.
It's actually my coolness rubbing off on him. That's what it is.
Whenever you get into a certain proximity of Aaron Carter and get in his camera angle, like glasses just pop up on his face.
Yeah, that's just how it happens. That needs to be a thing if somebody sees me in real life, yeah. In programming, we have Paul DeLeon. In the middle, if you guys see it, in the other camera. And then an artwork, Justin Yamaguchi. There you go. All right, that's cool for the podcast, everybody.
Yeah.
So they have to share a microphone, everybody. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
We will talk eventually.
Yes, we are definitely going to get into their game, Armored Acorn, everybody. We met them first at the Indie Arcade, right?
Sacramento Indie Arcade.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we saw their game, fell in love with it, had to have them on the show. And, of course, they're here. So we're going to get into that. So for the podcast, we're going to kind of do a little speed run. So let's do some banging around the web.
Banging around the web!
Now, I kept asking you two if you kept up with the social medias. Nexcra, have you guys kept up with social medias today? It's been a big kind of
day. What you got?
So, of course, you know we have a new president.
Oh,
what?
Yes, we about do? That.
Exactly.
Yes.
That happened?
The inauguration happened yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that thing, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
I think I know which one.
That was yesterday morning. Yeah.
Yesterday morning. So today, Saturday, the protests happened.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, of course. You know, this isn't a thing to bash anybody or whatever like that, but this does tie into the gaming world, actually, because in Korea, they had a women's, rights protest. All over the world. Yeah.
All over the world.
Yeah, but specifically in Korea, somebody made their debut on one of the flags over there.
Was it D.Va?
It was D.Va.
Oh!
D.Va, our very own Overwatch tank, was actually now a symbol for justice over there in Korea.
Makes sense.
She's on stickers.
This is
she's
South
on
Korea.
Flags. This is, of course, South Korea, yes.
North Korea, they don't know what D.Va is.
Not yet, no. Yeah. They have their own other game over there. But it was just actually very interesting to see... the video game world kind of becomes some type of symbol in the real world.
Yeah.
An actual symbol for movement over there. So if you live in Korea, of course, you probably have seen some of this thing. It was all over the internet. But it says the symbol also showed up on stickers with the slogan Rise of the Nation, Rise of the Women on it. So I don't know if anybody's going to get sued.
Was this? First of all. I was gonna say, does I don't know that D.Va really does anything to stand out or
right?
stand apart as like a symbol for women's rights.
Right. I would have gone Widowmaker.
Well, she's French, I think.
Yeah, that
I
would
could
make
see
sense
in Korea
in
they
Korea.
Gravitate towards the Korean character, but maybe they just don't have any other interesting, like really good characters.
Anna's pretty sweet.
Anna, yeah, Anna, she can. Yeah, I would have gone Sniper Class. You know, let's shoot out the injustice. No, nobody. Yeah. Whatever.
That's why Steven's the marketing.
That's why he is the marketing.
But Farrah has the catchphrase: "Justice reigns from above."
No, it's more like "Justice reigns."
Yeah, but you don't want to. You don't want to put that symbol on something. A woman shooting a whole bunch of rockets at people.
Maybe because D.Va's OP, they chose.
She
her.
Is, and she's especially. She's supposed to get a nerf, isn't she?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of people not playing her anymore. But whatever. Also, we have on the next docket, this is kind of woman-surrounded, woman-centric, if
Ooh,
you guys won't.
I'm interested.
Because, I mean, today was a lot about, you know, and I didn't even know that they were doing it all over the world until I actually got on to one of the video game websites and saw that they were doing it in Korea, they were doing it over
Well, Mr. David yeah. Webb's wife was actually at
yeah.
the
What?
She was
at
the one in Sacramento,
yeah, she was at the
yeah.
march.
So why Capital. Didn't you go, David?
Because, one, they went at 7:15.
Okay, too early.
Saturday. No.
Yeah, yeah, it's too early to protest. I understand.
Two, it was a lot of walking involved.
Okay, so exercise and early. Okay, that's two things that. Okay, what's the third strike?
That was about it.
All right, so Corey, why didn't you go?
Well, A, it was early in the morning.
All right, so that's strike one.
Two,
right.
From what I heard, there was a lot of walking.
There, yes, strike.
And
two.
I'm a married man, so me being in proximity of that many women, someone's getting pregnant.
That's
so
horrible.
I couldn't go.
So what? Aaron projects sunglasses on the people. You just get people randomly pregnant.
They just get pregnant.
That sounds like a criminal offense.
It's not my fault.
I think it's because you've said things are too close to something that Trump would say. And so maybe being in that vicinity would not have been good for you.
Yeah. And I'm just very, very potent.
That's horrible. A report came out last year, everybody. Yeah. A report came out last year. That might have a little bit of false information. Not really false information. They had the numbers. It was saying that there are roughly about half the gamers out there are actually female gamers. 41% was the hard number that they threw out there from this report. And somebody wanted to dig a little deeper because that could be a little misleading, right? So do we all have girlfriends or friends that are female that play video games, correct? Yes,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
All right, yes, all right.
I don't know if I do, but...
You right. don't? You can't think of one girl that you know that plays video games.
No.
Your cousin.
Already done. That's
I
a
don't
family
see her as
member.
A girl. That's a family member.
What?
She's in chat, too.
She literally, yeah, literally is in chat right now.
If they're a family member, they're just kind of a eunuch. That's just a being
like
that
a,
it exists. It's, I see no gender. So
they are a ball of mass
yeah.
that...
that breathes, I assume.
Happen to call, you know, family.
Yeah.
So... If you were to think about what type of games they play, Mr. Webb, what type of games do you think this 41%, the majority, play?
Oh, I got this.
I'm going to go fighting games.
Fighting games. That's
yeah.
a that's
absolutely
pretty good
not.
One.
No.
Corey?
FPS, first-person shooters.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of all of them?
Good, out of all
yeah,
of them.
That's actually
you know thing. How many girls play Call of Duty and you know all that? Because every time I talk to a girl, they're like, yeah, I play Call of Duty with my boyfriend.
Yeah, but do they or do they just turn in circles randomly shooting things?
No, sometimes they throw grenades.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I want to know, what do you think,
Nexgra, yeah, what do you think?
Maybe those farming games, you know, farming.
Farming simulator.
You know what? That's
Stardew.
Good.
Survival. What's that Nintendo game that everyone plays where you can go fishing?
Oh,
Stardew.
Animal Crossing.
Animal Crossing, yeah.
There you go, there you go.
What about the rest of next crowd? Let's get Paul on the mic.
I'd say either maybe something casual or MMOs.
Oh, MMOs.
Yeah, didn't even think about that one. Everybody.
And now moving on down to Justin. What do you
think? I'm just going
to
go with Euro Truck Simulator.
There we go. Oddly enough, number one on the list.
Euro Truck Simulator.
So, you know what? I'm blanking out. Sorry. The chat room is here, everybody. Say hello, chat.
What's up, chat?
Hey, chat.
What do you guys think?
Chat, yeah, chime in. What game do you think that 41% of gamers that are female, what's the majority?
Special Cases thinks that they play Homemaker 64.
Damn.
Wow. Come on.
Ban?
That is the opposite of what the...
30-second timeout.
Oddly enough, it's better than Superman 64.
Yeah, it actually is. Probably is. So coming in at number one, though, everybody, with a whopping 69% of that 49% of gamers, they play match three games. Bejeweled, Candy Crush.
See, that was my initial thought.
Yeah.
But I didn't want
to put yourself in that box. I didn't want to,
like, subjectify.
But it is. Yeah. But that's the thing. From the research, from 270,000 of these people. So, you know, it's not every single game.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What do you mean, these people?
Yeah, 270,000 of these people. These women.
I guess he can't say that.
Of these women.
If I said it, no.
Terrible. The next one on there, so I'll just go to the top three. So match three, of course, is the top one. You know, like I said, Bejeweled. And
FPS, second. Number two.
Second, Family/Farm Simulators.
Whoa!
There we go. There we go.
Is Sims in there? Is that Sims? Okay.
Yes, yeah. And then the third one, casual puzzle games. That's the category they put it in.
Who did this research again?
So
Forbes.
That makes sense.
So it sounds like mobile, maybe?
It sounds like mobile, yes. Nick Yee, the co-founder of Quantic Foundry, he published this report.
Well, it's interesting that they separated out match three from casual. I mean,
I was going to say that, too, because it kind of seems like puzzle games would kind
of... would be the same thing, right?
Yeah, I count that all together.
You can head on to over to their website as well to get, like, a very, very in-depth on each category of what they consider which games.
Right over there. I'll pass on that.
Do a hard pass.
Yeah. If you're interested. But it might help you single guys out in the dating game. Now you know which ones they want to play.
So many of them are downloading Candy Crush
right now.
When you're starting those Tinder conversations, you got a better opener.
Like, oh,
I'm in level 60 of Candy Crush, just so you know.
Exactly. For the ones that you guys were talking about, the MMOs, only 16%. That's far down in the bottom.
Where's FPS?
FPS, let's see. That one, oddly enough, I don't... Oh, first-person shooters, 7%.
That kind of be flawed.
What about fighting?
Fighting games, I don't see them on the list.
Dang. That's disappointing.
Sports, tactical shooters, racers... strategy games, MOBAs, turn-based strategy, open world, action adventure sandbox, RPG, city building, platformer, survival, Western RPG, Japanese RPG, MMOs, interactive drama, and atmospheric exploration.
I don't know. I think it's pretty flawed. When was this thing taken?
Like, 2016.
No.
Yeah.
Are you sure they didn't add an extra one? Because this is more like 2006.
No,
Who plays farming games anyways? Like, I haven't gotten a request for that shit in
Joey
years.
Ferris.
Yeah, there you go.
Ferrisville Productions. He loves Farming Simulator.
Yeah, he does.
He has a hat.
No, that's
everything.
Farming Simulator. I'm thinking, like, Farmville and things like that, like mobile things.
Well, so...
No one plays Farming Simulator. Man, woman, child, nobody plays those damn games.
So, this was kind of a thing where, you know, it was like, after the report came out saying that 41% of women are gamers... Or 40% of gamers are women. People were like, well, you know, there's your equality in the gaming. And everybody's kind of thinking like, well, gaming is kind of console PC is what they're thinking. And if the top three are more of this mobile thing, you know, are they really gamers? That was the question. Oh, I say yes.
Of course they are.
I still say yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Chat corrected me. There are some good farming ones out there. Stardew Valley, I forgot about. And
isn't there like magic in that
Harvest
though?
Harvest Moon. Yeah, but you're still, a majority of your time is spent like growing crops and stuff.
Nonetheless. Just a little bit of information to throw out in the ether, you know, let people know about what's out there about your gaming community.
A little fun fact.
Yeah, right. I loved it. So today, of course, we have the indie developers on here, guys, from Nexra Games. And I had a little small snippet of a story about a small game called Perception. Not Inception, because that's what I kept wanting to call it the whole time, but called Perception. It's a new horror game from ex-BioShock developers. Have you guys heard about this game, Nick?
I have not.
Not at all?
Well, I kind of want to get a little background on these guys first, because like this seems like an indie developer who came from AAA. Is that your guys' story, too? Have you guys ever worked in AAA, any of you?
Oh, no, none of us at all. I mean, we come from different backgrounds, and then we just got into gaming via being indie developers.
Hmm. Okay, so what do you think? Do you feel that that's like true indie? Like, how many games have you guys made? Like, Aaron,
about
you're a
three of them,
host.
Right?
That's
no,
right.
No, because it was going to lead into.
No,
it,
you're a bad host.
But you like.
You're a terrible host.
You like
no, you're
straddling
bad.
Things.
You're bad.
So,
I love straddling things. Yes, you're absolutely
clearly.
Right. However, in this case, I want to know how many games have you made? Let's learn about these guys.
Sure. Unofficially, I think we've got about 20 or so.
Oh, wow.
I'm counting prototypes. I'm counting board games or analog games just used for game design study. That ones that made it to production, three. We got two on iOS, and then our third one here is on Nintendo.
So you guys are indie developers. You've dedicated your lives to this. This is something you guys do.
It does take a lot of time.
So when you hear like of the when the AAA guys when they you know step away and they go indie, is that legit indie developing to you guys, or what is indie to you?
That's a good question, because it does it's a pretty broad range. You've got indies who have almost no money, which could be us, and then you've got the triple I's who've got pretty big budgets. To me, indie would be a developer who can pretty much develop whatever they want, and they're beholden to no one, and that would cover that spectrum for me.
So you say triple I.
Triple I is one I've heard from this guy, actually.
Is that like akin to a triple A title? So it's a big, like a triple A would be, you know, EA making, Madden or Call of Duty. Mm. So a triple I would just be what? Just a indie developer that has a lot of, you know, money and backup?
Well, I mean, it's not. It's a term that I heard from somewhere, but I think it kind of fills the like the B tier game that we used to have, sort of towards the late '90s, early 2000s.
Okay,
it's an indie developer who has more like a bunch more money than we do.
So then, where's the line then? Is it just publishers? Like, was that will that take them away from being?
I would say so. Yeah, if you have a publisher putting money into you, especially then. I don't think I could call that indie. Yeah.
Big investors.
So we're in a new era then, because I mean we have like Kickstarter, GoFundMes, and stuff like that, and people are making a lot of you know dough off of this. What's the space game now? That's a quote unquote indie game. That's
Star Citizen.
Star Citizen. Oh, yeah. That's made a ton of cash off of their you know Kickstarter. Are they still considered indie?
It's a good question. I mean, you don't have like a corporate interest putting money into you, but I think at some point when you have if your Kickstarter is made over $10 million, I don't really think you can call yourself indie anymore. When you hire a staff and operate like a conventional development studio.
Then it's just, we're out of the realm of indie.
We got some very informed people in chat because Nascent Games is in there. And nice. They're the ones who put on the Sacramento Indie Arcade. And he says, AAA doesn't step away and go indie, quote unquote. He said, AAA takes a chance on a game that doesn't cater to their stockholders.
So what about the...
Interesting.
Because this game that we were about to get into, Perception, these are just ex-BioWare developers. Once mainstream, are you always mainstream? Can you not revert back to the indie?
It seems like they left for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like they probably wanted to go, I guess, quote unquote, indie to where... They can do what they want, most likely. Maybe they didn't want to sleep at their desk or what have you. But I feel like a lot of developers do end up doing that. Or they just have a project in the back of their minds and they probably just want to go out and do it. Maybe that's what Perception is.
So Perception, to kind of tie this back in, I'm going to call it an indie game just for, you know, for this segment. But it's a game where you play as the main character and she's blind and she's navigating through a house. Now, all people here that are, you know, sighted, which is 100% of us in the room, don't know what it's like to be blind. But in this game, you'll kind of get a feeling. You use echolocation for your navigation, and the whole game has a very dark tone to it. So no really colors. Everything's washed out. A lot of just blacks and whites, basically. But you'll see, like, the echo bounce off of a lamp, and of course you'll see how the lamp looks. And it was interesting to me because, one, it's not a game where you're going to be, you know, blown away by the color, of course. And two, it's really playing on that fear of the dark type of thing. You don't know what's out there until you hit that echo location.
When you were first describing it, I thought it was just a cheap way to make a game with absolutely no graphics.
Now, see, that's
you're
what it looks like.
Looking at a black screen. It's an audio experience.
that's working, making the best of your constraints right there.
Yeah. So that's why I'm kind of putting it in the, you know, the indie category.
You're 100% blind. For that. And you have, it's a first-person game.
It is a first-person, definitely. It's set for the PS4, of course.
Of course. Of course it would go on the PlayStation.
I mean, what else would... I mean, and that's another question for you guys.
It'd be for the VR.
Do you think... and now, see, that's where they should have taken it, actually.
Yeah.
When you look at the actual
It might
game.
Actually make sense.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask if it was VR.
Yeah.
Sounds like a perfect... For the HTC product.
I didn't see if it was or not.
Yeah, I didn't either.
It would be perfect if they made it VR.
Before we go on further with this one, too, let me get you guys' thoughts on No Man's Sky. Because they began indie, and then, of course, PlayStation picked them up. Do you think that indie games are harmed by bigger companies picking them up?
I'm sure they got a little bit more fire under them to get that game out and to produce something, you know, they saw in the trailer, you know. And I don't know. It's just No Man's Sky was so big in scope, so huge. And then PlayStation got a hold of it and was like, this is what we want. We want it huge. And then there's this small team of guys like, okay, sure, we could do it. And I think their idea was just too big. And since Sony got a hold of them, they tried to go with that idea, and it just didn't turn out.
I wonder if, you know, you can chime in on this one, if there are things that they can say no to. Like, if you guys made plenty of games, if a developer came up to you and they wanted to, or a publisher came up to you and they wanted to buy something, you know, an idea that you had, but you didn't agree with what their vision was of it, how hard is it to say, you know, no, I think I'm going to do my own thing?
I wonder if it would be a cash call, you know?
Yeah.
You wonder, even No Man's Sky, like, they probably got fronted a lot of cash, and so that's why they had all that pressure. So I still give them credit. Still incredible concept.
Did you get to play the game?
I've played it briefly. And
so that's why he still thinks it's incredible.
You're right.
Yeah.
He hasn't put enough time into it.
Yeah, I think only one of my buddies bought it because the reviews weren't so hot. So
you want?
Oh, yeah, no, I was just going to add that, going back to that scenario we were talking about, I think part of it, too, is how much am I in love with the idea. If it's an idea that I wanted to turn a very specific way, then it would be really hard for me to go ahead and make any agreements with anybody else and trying to execute that idea. Whereas if it's an idea that I'm not so attached to, then I'd probably be more open to something like that.
Well, let's get right into it then. Unless you had something to add on?
I would gladly sell anything we've ever made.
Yeah, I made more money on my paper route, I think.
I will sell out instantly.
Let's talk about this Armored Acorns. This is the game we saw last year at the Indie Arcade. Great event, by the way. Got to showcase a lot of indie developers and all their stuff. You know, some rough builds and some more polished than the others, but still a lot of people taking the courage and going out there and, you know, showing their stuff to the public. It was a wonderful event, actually. Can't wait to the next one.
I loved it. I thought we had a great build up to that. We had an indie developer each week come into the studio and we had to play their games.
Yeah.
And then it all culminated at that big event where we got to meet Orange Lounge Radio and got to play all these different games, like, further along. So, like, I remember I didn't get to play as much Armored Acorns as I wanted to because it seemed like there was always a line. And I'm not a line guy, but that's a good sign. And then when I did actually get to play it for a few seconds, it was freaking amazing. So who wants to describe exactly what Armored Acorns is? And is it Armored Acorns or is it Armored A-C-O-R-N?
That was my first question because I just noticed the acronym today, yeah.
So it is Armored Acorns. Don't ask what the acronym stands for.
Okay, all right.
We probably have it somewhere in the archive. Best way to describe it is kind of a throwback couch co-op beat 'em up. So if you go back to the days of Simpsons, Battletoads, anything in the arcade, Double Dragon 2, we just wanted something where you can get with your buddies and actually sit down and play together because we all online game. So we wanted something easy to pick up. Kids could play it. Kids could play it with maybe with their dads or moms and just get up and play, walk away from it minutes later.
And I do want to add the whole couch co-op thing also just came from thinking about games when I was a kid. I'm sure, I mean, we're all Nintendo generation here, and we spent a lot of time playing games next to our friends. Yeah. And, you know, that doesn't seem as prevalent anymore, so.
Not for the time being.
Not
yeah,
for the time being. I mean,
we got stuff on the way.
Of course,
but
But, yeah, I mean, that was just one thing that came to mind when we decided to make this game. I think compared to the other games we made, this game is one that we really just wanted to make without thinking about things like what's popular at the time. Like, for instance, our last game was a free-to-play game. And we don't really understand free-to-play that well, but we still made one anyway because that's kind of what the market was, where it was going for mobile. The lesson we got from that was just, you know, kind of make what's closer to your heart rather than what's popular in the market. And so that's where this game is.
This art design, I mean, I really like the art design. I mean, I'm always into the you know, cartoony looking stuff. What was the inspiration behind that one? Was it still akin back to the old NES days, or?
Well, I don't know. Before I worked for NextCry, I came from an animation background in Burbank in LA. So it was, I mean, it's sort of a hybrid of the stuff that I played when I was really young and, you know, the stuff that I was working on, you know, after school in my, you know, in my job.
And so we heard a little bit of the music before we did the show, you know, right into it. Who was over the music again?
Oh, so for that, we actually sent something out to try to find somebody who can join us to help us with the music.
Uh-huh.
And we found this great composer from Canada. His name is Jordan Reed, Amphibious Music on SoundCloud. And
yeah, definitely.
So I mentioned Nintendo Generation and all that, but we're also Sonic fans too. So I really love the music in Sonic, and so did our composer. And so if you listen to his stuff on SoundCloud, you can kind of hear some of the influence there and in our game as well. So yeah, that's basically where we got music from.
So you guys, first two actual, like, I guess, published games with the iOS, right?
Yep.
What made you want to switch and go to the consoles here?
It's part of what I mentioned earlier, just sort of making games that kind of we're more interested in. I think games that we understand better. We got into mobile simply because the barrier of entry was not as high. I mean, $100, you can become an Apple developer and sign up for the program, and then get your app on the store. But we played console games, PC games as kids, and we understand those games better. And so that's why we wanted to move to Nintendo, or to the consoles. I picked Nintendo because I'm just a Nintendo fanboy.
I was going to say, like, what's so have you ever even tried to develop on the other systems? Or
not yet, but I would definitely be interested in doing something like that in the future.
So the Armored Acorns games, we have four players, right?
That's right.
Four players, couch co-op. Was that by design as well, or?
Yeah, that's correct. So the Wii and Wii U, really good for local multiplayer stuff. And so from the get-go, when we were designing this game, we already decided it's going to be up to four players local co-op.
Any like nods you take from any of the old Nintendo? So you said you're a Nintendo guy. Any nods in the game like oh, you can see like little Mario mushroom in the background of one of the levels.
I wouldn't risk that. Although the guy who made Flappy Bird, I guess, didn't.
Yeah, see,
so
he
went full blown. Those are pretty. Those are pretty close. Oh yeah, he made a lot of them. Here, Sam. I'm trying to remember, but I can't think of anything right now.
I feel like we had a lot in the beginning, and we took a few out because they were so obscure. Like we're like, no one's gonna get this. But I'd say there is definitely some nods. I'm a huge Battletoads guy. If you guys ever played Battletoads, the impossible vehicle level is pretty much the level you couldn't get past. And that was, I think, the third level in the game.
Yeah, that was the that was Dark Souls before Dark Souls was Dark Souls.
Exactly. So I'd say there's a nod to that. There's a couple other 90s references, even pop culture-y references that you guys might pick up on. But yeah, we wanted to keep it throwback style for sure.
Yeah, there's one I can think of. It was an original concept, but then we just ended up scrapping it because it didn't play very well. And that happens a lot. So, you know, we'd come up with a cool idea, we'd play it in our heads, and we'd write it down, and we'd talk about it. And then we actually build it, and it turns out to be boring or crap. So one of them was a nod to Dragon, or Double Dragon. I don't know if you guys remember Double Dragon 2 on the NES. There's this one boss sequence where you're on a helicopter.
Oh, I definitely don't remember
and
this.
And then so the boss comes out. He's this big, burly-looking dude. And then you fight him, and then once he's gone, the door opens again, and another one of those guys come out. And so we tried to do something like that in our game, where the boss would come out twice, but it ended up being more irritating and annoying than actually interesting or fun.
Turns out Double Dragon wasn't as good as we remembered it.
Yeah, we actually played Double Dragon to study it, and yeah, we found a lot of things that we didn't notice as kids.
Is that the fun part of this? Because now we're getting into it. You got to study because you know you're making something like this now, so you get to study these old games. Yeah. What were some of the lists that you guys went down?
We beat Simpsons, which is actually an incredibly boring game.
Okay.
Once you play it a lot, you're like, wow, this game does not have a lot to it. It's really fun for short periods, but man, when you sit there for an hour and a half, it gets simple.
And that's the arcade one,
yes,
right?
The arcade
one. So that's a tough one, because I know I've never, ever beat any arcade. You know, I've beat one arcade game, but it was not a beat-em-up, so.
Well, I'm guessing you guys didn't dump a bunch of nickels into the machine.
Well, first of all, nobody uses nickels.
I do.
They do have that at CoinOp.
They have nickel machine?
I believe they have Simpsons.
They have Simpsons, yes.
Definitely. We love CoinOp.
Yeah.
What other games did you guys run down for, studying?
Had to be Castle Crashers, right?
One of them was. Another one was Turtles in Time.
Oh, yeah. The original or the remake?
The original. Okay. Not the remake. I haven't touched
it. Well, you should have studied that one as what not to do. Because in your game, how many directions can you, like, attack? Is it just the four? or can you go up?
Left and right, but you have the three-fourths.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
Yeah,
because I think in Turtles, didn't they screw it up? Because they made the attacking, you can like attack in any direction.
Kind of,
instead of just like...
You had eight different directions to attack in and get attacked from. So it was kind of... They didn't keep the spirit of the original game alive. That's what they did. They really messed that up. So that was the other thing, because I, you know, as opposed to going like 3D with the characters that I've seen in these latest beat 'em ups, I think they did it with, of course, they did it with the remake for Turtles in Time. They did it, I believe, as well with the new Double Dragons. As
I heard that was dope, though.
Yeah,
like it was the big good. '80s remake one.
So was that another choice decision to go with, you know, animated over the like CG or whatever?
Oh, I think part of it too is just bandwidth for our team. I think it takes a lot more work to do 3D well, and Dustin's, I guess, more comfortable and has more strength in 2D drawn art. Plus, it's just also personal preference as well. I think I'm a pretty big 2D fan. Yeah.
If you wanted to say anything, or... Yes.
So the other thing is, we didn't hear anything about the story. Is there like a little background story to this? Like, why are we have, you know, squirrels or acorns, you know? Sure.
And, you know, I think part of it, as development goes on, we make so many decisions and we have so many, like, questions that we still have. So I think the details start to get fuzzier and fuzzier, and then now we get to talk about this stuff again. So I'll try my best to recall some of this. So the original inspiration, I guess, we were thinking about games from our childhood. Mm-hmm. We're kids in the 90s, so we're thinking about things like Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, things like that. And originally, we were trying to do some kind of Power Rangers-inspired thing. And when I thought about that, we were going to do like a beat-em-up with like big mechs and stuff. And then I was thinking, if we had big mechs, we wouldn't have so much flexibility with the environment we can put them in, because you can't really put big mechs anywhere except near skyscrapers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what we did was we took the main characters and shrunk them down into squirrels and then put them in human-sized robots. So doing nice. That gave us the flexibility to put them in elevators, put them in on hover bikes, put them in like city streets and in the forest. So
it's a big mech to a squirrel.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where the squirrel part comes from.
Why squirrels?
That's
you could have
question.
Chosen any animal, rodents. Any woodland creature.
So originally we went with hamsters, and we came up with a cool title. I don't remember what the title was,
there
but
was
then we did
hamstars.
Hamstars. We did a trip.
Okay. He seemed ashamed to say that. He was like, it was hamsters.
We have Kia Motors LLC, apparently.
Yeah. Wow.
So there are several reasons why we didn't.
Oh, those dancing things?
They really
had
it?
Yeah.
Were those the hamstars?
Yeah.
Ah, damn, you missed it by that much, guys.
So, I mean, hamsters are all over the place when it comes to, you know, entertainment, like what they could be used for. And we did find that the title we came up with, I think it was infringing on someone's trademark or something like that. So I said, screw it, we'll just pick up some other cute animal. Oh, squirrels kind of fit the bill.
And you didn't have to change anything except add a big poofy tail.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, well, it's basically the same animal.
We were actually, I think, a little more ambitious than that. We wanted to do different kinds of rodents. So one of them would be like a flying squirrel. And one of them would be like a
flying squirrel. Okay.
That, save it for the sequel. Shh.
Yeah.
Nobody listens to the show anyway, so you're good.
No, yeah, we had a lot of concept art, a lot of pictures for all kinds of crazy stuff. But we were like, what's cute, likable? Actually, I don't even know if squirrels are likable, even though it is Squirrel Appreciation Day.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it is National Squirrel Day.
So there is something to be said for that.
Can you guys spend some money and get, like, Conker as a DLC character?
That would be sweet.
That
would
be sweet if this thing
get
takes
a new
off.
Mech for him.
Maybe I could throw in some money for that one. Aaron, would you? I'd
get
pitch
a,
in.
Yeah, get a Marvel tie-in, too, with Squirrel Girl.
Perfect.
Yeah, there you go.
She's canonically the most powerful hero.
Yeah.
Exactly. There you go. So I mean,
yeah, you have to say you have to redo the joke. Sorry.
Squirrel Girl was canonically the most powerful Marvel hero.
There she is. Yeah.
Oh, it's yeah.
She takes it out Doom. She's taking out Wolverine.
It's 100% by accident.
Yeah,
100% by accident. So this game definitely. Are we looking at any other platforms once we get it off the ground?
Yeah, we'd like to see where we can take it after the Wii U. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm a Nintendo fan. I'd love to take it to the Switch.
Yeah, what did you guys think about that? Yeah, because, I mean, that looks like it sets up perfectly for this game.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I mean, we talked about local co-op multiplayer in the Switch. When I was watching the presentation, you could hook up 8 of them together.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm really looking forward to. However, I am probably going to miss the gamepad because the gamepad really did serve some useful uses for other games. Like, I don't know if you guys play Splatoon, but in Splatoon, you've got your map on the gamepad, and you've got the main game on the screen, and you can just pick and choose where to jump on the map.
Oh, interesting.
Or you can also see the coverage of your paint on the gamepad. So I'm very interested to see how they're going to handle that with the Switch. Maybe you can, like, buy two or something, and one of them will play the game. And
or this revolutionary idea called a mini map. I mean, I haven't seen many games use it, but...
Oh,
a mini map.
Yeah, it's like a map, but it's, like, small, and you put it just in the little corner.
That's what? Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. What games use that? I don't know. Never noticed that in a game.
The what I want to know too is, so you guys are going with Nintendo, and it's going to come out. And I got a good feeling about this one, guys. But in your guys' vision, what's the perfect scenario? Like, how does this thing like go from just an indie title to what do you want it to become, and how does it get there?
Well, I'd really like to get a chance to do a sequel for this game. So we talked about a lot of ideas. We came up with a lot of concepts. Some of them we tried out, and they didn't work out very well. Some of them we didn't even get the time to try out. And so I think that's a perfect place to try to do that in the sequel. And so I hope it would do just well enough for us to be able to do another one and get a chance to do it again.
Is there like, is any part of the goal like Nintendo looks at it and they're like, holy fucking shit, this is better than our last like five original IPs. Let's throw a bunch of money at these guys and let them do whatever they want. Is that part of it, or are you guys so indie where it'd be like, sorry guys, we just want to?
Well, I mean, that would be nice. It never crossed my mind, but it would be very nice if that happened.
I think then we retitle ourselves to Hello Games.
There you go. Wow. What about your ideas or your thoughts on DLC for a game? Do you guys even put any thought to that, or is it we want to get this thing out here and make a solid game?
I'd say we're definitely just going to worry about this game first, but we will say we're really happy patching exists because we realize a lot of games go out and then some crazy bug happens that you never realize was there, and now you can patch it, unlike the old NES games or old games where it's just, nope, that's it.
I mean, I do want to emphasize, we are trying to test the crap out of it still, yes, to make sure we ship something that works.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not out here, of course, to the live show, because we're going to be able to demo this thing, right, live on twitch.tv, everybody. And if you're not out here, you doing yourself a disservice, people.
Putting VGB really. Studios to the test here, because we got a Wii U dev edition. What are you guys working on over here?
Oh, that's not a dev kit. That's not an event kit. So that's a specific kit that we have permission to bring around for shows and things like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, dev kits are pretty strict about those kinds of
things. How is that?
You can't see the dev kit.
Yeah, no. I can't even show that thing, nor describe it.
Oh, yeah, because usually they just look like a PC anyways, right? For the ones I've seen leaked.
It's like they can't even talk about
you
it.
Can't even, nope. Damn, it is on lockdown.
Yeah. NDA.
Yeah. Mario is standing right outside the window. Yeah.
With a shotgun.
That creepy Mario shaking from the first commercial.
Or the Mega 64. I'm thinking of the Mega 64 video. I don't know if you guys saw that one.
Uh-uh.
Like you've got Mario and Luigi for Nintendo. Then you've got, I think, dudes from Halo for Microsoft. And I think Sega had Sonic, right? It's been a while since I've seen that video.
Well, they did just have the GTA Online version of Mario.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
that was pretty creepy.
What do you guys think about Mario Odyssey, first of all? I want to hear from Paul.
The fanboy.
Yeah. So, you're the big fanboy. What do you think about the Mario Odyssey trailer?
No, when I saw it, I mean, it was pretty, unexpected. I mean, he comes out of the manhole, and then it's like New York, or, well, New Donk City.
Yeah, New Donk City. Yeah.
That seems like the perfect name for a strip club.
I'm gonna start. What strip club are you going to?
Maybe in Bangkok.
I'm gonna start a new one called New Donk City, because that means big booty. You just get a bunch of big booty hoes dancing around.
Okay.
You're not gonna invest, Aaron?
No, I'm gonna stay away from that nightmare.
Whatever.
That PR nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, so anyway, I saw the trailer. It was pretty surprising to see him in like a realistic setting.
Did you get the Sonic feel?
I did. That's what I was telling these guys. Yeah. So when I got a Dreamcast on liquidation, because hey, I bought the 32X, and that was the last Sega system I paid full price for. I was so pissed.
Wow.
Damn. I bought that thing.
Well, you should be. For 32X, yeah, you should have.
That pissed me off
so much.
Anyway, so I got a Dreamcast on liquidation, and I got Sonic. I think it's Sonic Adventures. Is that what it's called?
Sonic Adventures. Game. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're walking around in like a world with people in it.
With people,
like,
yes. And he looks so out of place.
He does. And I was thinking about that with Mario as well. But then I saw them change the background he was in, and he was starting to change different in the different settings and worlds. And that's when it made sense. And so I'm a little more excited about it now that I've seen that.
And Corey, you're against this. You don't want to blend our worlds.
I don't
want
to blend. I don't want Mario coming around my world. Like when he was, you know, Mario-ing it up with people who are normal looking, it kind of just broke the whole immersion.
What, the immersion of?
Of this Mushroom Kingdom land where it's just little mushroom people and stubby looking plumbers. And
well, plumber, basically.
No, Luigi's a plumber too, isn't he?
He's not stubby though. That's the tall one.
Yeah, he's not stubby. Yeah, and he's an intern. She's an intern. Yeah. We all know it is.
I don't know. Seeing them cross over to our world just doesn't. I don't want that.
Even if it plays into the story.
No, there's no way that that makes sense in any story.
Yeah, he literally has like a TARDIS he's riding around in, and he's going from like world to world, different dimensions.
He needs to stay out of my world.
The game is called,
I agree with Corey on that one.
See,
the game is called Odyssey, and if anybody,
it could
ever
be
read,
Odyssey of different worlds.
Yeah,
that
that's what it is.
Our own world.
Oh, you don't want him coming to our own world. Okay.
They already has the underwater world, the big world, the mushroom world. He's got plenty. The desert world. He's got a lot.
I feel it's going to get real crazy. I think that's not the craziest thing you're going to see in this Odyssey game. I think it's going to get out there. Let's talk about the hardware, though. As developers, Nintendo comes out with this hardware that's supposed to be kind of like revolutionary each time. When they came out with the Wii, they had the little Wii remote, of course. Wii U, not so much really crazy to that, you know, just screen and the controller. But now with this Switch, they have this, what, HD controller? This HD Rumble in there. And they show, you know, like you can feel the ice cubes in the glass. You can feel the water filling up. When you guys see that as developers, does that spark any imagination? Or is that just, well, there's another gimmick that a console has?
I'd say a little bit of both, because the thing is, you have to develop for that specific thing on that one console, and then if you do try to port or something like that, it's like, shoot, that doesn't have it. Or maybe they have some other gimmicky thing that you have to worry about. So that is one thing about the Wii U. So Wii U, we have the gamepad with the screen. So we had to think about, like, how can we use this maybe to incorporate some gameplay or incorporate something into it that makes it unique. But I do think Nintendo does a good job of that, that they create somewhat unique experiences compared to the other systems.
Do you have something other than that, though?
No, I mean, I agree with Sam. It's just nice to see that there might be another way we can, another dimension we can add to our games.
Yeah.
Of course, we'd have to actually, you know, try it out and play it and see what kind of ideas we can come up with. But it's always good to see new ideas coming out like that.
So how do you think it'll fare then with the other developers? You think they're just gonna pass over it?
I would say a lot of the AAAs and a lot of the bigger ones do just pass over it. Mm-hmm. They're like, we just do double screen, or we don't need to worry about that. Because I even think Xbox One, I want to say they had the rumble and the triggers.
I have the Corey. Do you have the rumble and the triggers of the Xbox One?
The Xbox One?
I'm almost positive.
Whenever you're watching Netflix,
it's kind of the same. Rumble, you're right. It's called haptic feedback,
they
called it. Yeah. And it's just a more specified type of rumble, so you get a general direction of where things are coming from. The whole thing doesn't shake, but if you're getting shot from the right-hand side, the right side of the controller will.
Because I want to say Forza did a good job, and I feel like they incorporated the rumble a little bit better, but then I feel like every other game, I don't notice it at all. So I feel like most people are like, we don't need that. We'll just make a good game.
So then I wonder why they decided to take those leaps. Like, you know, they didn't need to put this HD rumble in it, but they decided still to go with it anyway.
My two cents is that Nintendo seems to be wanting to separate themselves. I think we might have been talking about it that they're like almost a partner console now, whereas you're going to have your Xbox or your PlayStation or PC as your kind of home base, and then you're going to pull out this Nintendo thing for fun.
Oh, well, I mean, it's been that way.
It's been that way for a while, but I mean, like, they're just running away with that. Now they're doing the whole portable thing, whereas Xbox and PlayStation, obviously PC, not portable at all.
No,
I
think we coined it
back. But it's just inconvenient as fuck.
Yeah,
you can bring your gaming laptop somewhere, but you're going to need to bring a router, and you're going to need a bunch of Cat 5 cables.
So then that's
it's
not
a nightmare.
Portable. Yeah, it is in theory. Okay. Yeah, I will
always defend PC.
And that's fine.
You should know better.
That's fine. You can defend
you know better.
To the death.
I will.
Of the console.
I will die.
Which you'll never die. I can understand that. Nintendo has been kind of an add-on. I mean, we used to call it the, you know, Wii 60 if you had an Xbox and the Wii, or the PS Wii if you had the PS3.
Oh, you guys are so creative over there at GameStop.
Because that's what people did.
Which is why you guys were working at GameStop.
Yeah, which is what people do.
Did you work at GameStop?
Exactly. But I think eventually, you know, like they said in Japan, it sold out like in minutes, the pre-orders for the Wii, or for the Switch, excuse me. And then
that's today, isn't it? I think.
Yeah,
they
just
got their,
today.
They got the pre-orders.
Yeah, they just got their stuff today.
That's right.
And then over here, of course, you know, it was like
Yeah, I got one.
You got one?
Oh, yeah, I got one.
Wow.
You're
the second person I know that's got one then. That's it.
Well, I think when they first announced it, like, following the presentation, I mean, it was really hard to, like, find. But I think GameStop got, like, a second wind or something because I revisited their site, and then I saw they were back online. And you can add it to your cart. And I didn't think it was a mistake or if it's, like, for a second wave or something. But, no, apparently it's for the first wave. So.
What do you think about the pricing?
Oof. Yeah, that one is it's a little high, I think. Part of it.
Really?
Well, I'm thinking about when I got the Wii. I had the Wii and the Wii U. They had that Wii Sports for the Wii and Nintendo Land for the Wii U, and I really enjoyed those. It was great to get a console, bring it home, and start playing something immediately. For this one, I had to buy a 1-2 Switch just so that I have something, and I've got Zelda, of course.
Oh, so yeah, 1-2 Switch isn't their like launch with it title.
It's not a pack-in; it's separate. So, still looking forward to playing it. It's just it's not a pack-in like they had with the previous two.
So with the Switch, of course, being Nintendo's next thing, say we perfect world, Armored Acorns comes out, smash hit, and they're like, we want one on our Switch. Do you foresee trying to make any changes to the actual game to do it, or are you just like, we're going to do a port, same thing?
For the actual game, this particular one, I tried to think of things we could do. I couldn't really think of anything. But for a sequel, I do have a few things in mind. But we'll see.
Oh, we're going to keep it under wraps too? Okay. All right. Let's see how that is.
So it was a pretty ballsy move going Nintendo exclusive because, like, when you think about it, especially when the Wii U is their champion, like, that's a percentage of a percentage of a percentage of, like, gamers. Why not open it up to PC? Would it be too incredibly difficult? Because, I mean, the player base is huge there, and Steam got an awesome greenlight community. What was the thinking of just going straight Nintendo, knowing that you're cutting down the potential customer?
I definitely agree we do have a smaller market. I'd say we'd look into PlayStation, Xbox beforehand, but main reason for PC, at least me personally, was that the whole couch co-op experience kind of gets skewed a bit.
Skewed.
You don't even have it. Because you might have some four guys on a keyboard, might be super clunky and weird, or you'd have to.
It's already weird.
Yeah.
PC game.
Yeah. Or you'd have to start networking and do it online, but then that defeats the purpose of what we're trying to do.
Okay.
So I feel like the whole console concept, not that we're opposed to it completely.
It's maybe okay. Next for games opposed to PC games. We're here first, everybody.
New title of the episode.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Nextcra hates PCs.
Yeah.
Well, not all of us, just some of us. No, I play StarCraft. I used to play StarCraft. A lot of StarCraft. Well, I want to add, like, a technological point of view to it, too, is just consoles for us, we're a small team. There's three of us here, and we've got a few contractors and other members. Consoles are a lot more predictable. I mean, when we were starting our game development, we started on iPhone over Android for the same reasons that we're doing console. The hardware is predictable. For iPhone, we only had, at the time, iPhone 4 to worry about and iPhone 3GS. So that's two resolutions that we only have to mess with. For console, we've got the Nintendo Wii U. So the hardware is very consistent. The controllers are the same. We know exactly what button they're going to push for whatever they're doing. No one's going to use anything different. And it makes it a lot easier for me as a programmer to know exactly what the hardware is going to be. For PC, it's a crapshoot. I don't know what they're running. We have to set a minimum system rec and just pray that they play the game properly with whatever peripherals they have or settings they've got. So that's the big thing for me is just stable hardware, just something working on something that's very consistent.
Stable hardware. I like that. Stable hardware.
Heard it from a programmer.
Yeah, you heard it directly from a programmer. Stable
he's
going to
take that. He's going to run with that. You know that, Corey.
I'll give him some stable hardware.
That's horrible. That's horrible.
I don't think that came out the way you wanted it to.
I think it did.
Any questions from the chat? Because I want to kind of get my hands on this game. If we,
Nasa Games just backing him up. Says console is so much easier to develop for. There's no having to worry about making your game 4K Ultra mode that requires budget. And average indie dev has no such budget for such a task.
Yeah, you're not triple I, right? We're not
yet.
We're like negative single.
See, we're actually Q. We didn't even qualify for I.
I mean, I love doing this show as much as the next guy, Aaron. But I am so stoked for afterwards getting to play this.
Oh yeah, that's why I'm trying to say. How much have we got here? We good? Because I got one major question, and then I think we can end up the wrap up and get to it.
Actually, just now somebody came in. Do you guys still have the Indiegogo campaign going on?
Guys, Indiegogo campaign?
Did you guys crowdsource at all for it?
No crowdsourcing.
I love how people come in and they just assume, though, because that's like pretty much, that's pretty commonplace. Was there a reason you decided just to do it yourself? That's a pretty bold move.
I think one of the reasons came down to the whole single eye mentality of if we got a publisher involved or if we got even crowdsource involved, it's like, well, they might expect something, or they're going to ask us to do something, or put requirements on us.
You have someone to answer to.
Exactly.
This way you do it the way easy you way want of putting to.
Full freedom. Yeah.
We could do whatever we want. Literally, that is the beauty of this.
So then why do you do what you want to do? Why are you an indie developer?
There's is it fun still?
There's
right
the million
now?
Dollar question. You know, we try to ask Michael Bay why he wants. You know, why are you a director? Couldn't tell us.
I still think it comes down to the whole free expression thing. Is, you know, you could put in your quirky dialogue, or you can draw something however you want to do it. You can throw in an idea, and if it works, it works. Cool, put it in. And if you axe something, we have axed a lot, unfortunately. But yeah, you can just say, "All right, that's going in the garbage," and you literally just throw it away. It's sweet.
Yeah, I mean, while we might not have the resources of a bigger team or ones that are, I guess, better funded. It's what Sam said. During a lot of the development, we pretty much just experimented. We got a chance to try a lot of new things and just throw things away as they didn't work, and just make changes on the fly without having to answer to anybody. And that really helped in the development process. Oh,
he's like, I got something to say.
Me too, guys.
But I mean, to build on that, the tools to make games, to make content, to make all these sort of things have been so democratized in the last 10, 15 years that now, I mean, people like us can do it just, you know, to say, what the hell, why not? Let's give it a try. Whereas before that, you really didn't have that option to do that.
Very good. Very good. You hear that at home, people, you know, live the dream. It's so many resources out there. We actually say that a lot whenever we do the kind of live shows and everything like that. Never asks, you know, how do you get into podcasting or anything like that? Like, you basically have all the tools you need right in front of you most of the time, you know. I even tried recording on a cell phone one time, and it's actually pretty good to even just pick up audio off of that.
Well, I kind of want to ask him, too, like, because that's a huge thing. People go to panels all the time. They go to SAC Indie Arcade. You know, they go to these things, and most of them have that little pipe dream in their heart where they're like, man, I'd like to do this someday. But the sad reality is that a large percentage of them just won't. For some reason, because it's so hard just to, you know, they don't know where to go. They don't know how to get started. They don't want to feel stupid because they don't know anything. There's so many different reasons that hold people back from achieving greatness. I'd like to hear each of your guys' experience, just kind of in a nutshell. What did it actually take to go from, you know, this is something that I'd like to do someday? What was the first step of actually getting your ass out the door to start building video games?
Well, Paul started it, so he could start it off.
Help me?
That first video game experience, like when you first took it from this would be something cool to I'm going to actually make a game.
Well, I think what helped, well, I should mention that when I first started the studio, I was working kind of a job that I guess didn't allow the kind of creative freedom the creative work that I'm doing right now. And I went to school as a programmer, or computer science for programming, and I love programming too. But the job I was working at didn't really make it exciting. I didn't get to program anything exciting. So I think what helps is not only do I like video games, but I like the program as well. And another big thing that helped is I've got a friend who was also in the game industry, and he was just telling me about his game and how it worked. And pretty much just told me, you know, just make the game. Just get started and finish it, and then you can go from there. And so I guess just having someone who's done it already tell me that it's possible to do helped a lot.
Some people, they hit that thing where it's like, well, I don't know anybody. The people who don't know, where are some good resources, places you can go, online communities that you guys are aware of for like aspiring game developers?
Well, I mean, we've got a good one right here in SAC. Gabe with IGDA has been very helpful for those out there who want to do this. They do a lot of game jams, and I myself haven't done a lot of game jams simply because we're busy building our own game.
Yeah.
But the ones I've done were a lot of fun, and you get to work with all these different people, and you actually finish a game in the same day. And from doing that, you can learn a lot.
And there's no experience required, right?
No.
You just show up. I saw there was a lady who wrote like kids books or something, and she was like, I just showed up. And like I was like, I have a couple characters, and I want to teach kids how to read. So, and then these game developers came around her and helped her make something really awesome.
Yeah, the thing about game development is it's not just knowing about programming or artwork. There's a lot of other things, too. There's sound design. There's music. There's story. There's a lot of different skill sets that come into making just one game. And so anybody can be useful showing up to a game jam, I think.
Is that where you guys all came together, or?
Oh, actually, no. So I've known Justin since middle school. Uh-huh. We went to middle school together. And around the time I started doing game development stuff, Justin was posting artwork on Facebook. And, you know, I'm a programmer, but I don't really do art. And I've known Justin for a while, and his art looked really good. So I'm like, all right. I reached out to him, said, you know, I'm working on a game. You want to try working on this with me? And ever since then, we've been working together on that kind of on nice. Games. Yeah.
And then you just saw an ad in the newspaper. Is that what happened?
Like, no,
it's like, whoa.
Sam is an addition to the team that we really needed. He's our marketing/communications guy. I worked with him in the government before, actually. And
wait, like America?
Oh, California, state of California government.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, these guys in government?
Yeah.
Victoria.
You didn't know Armored Acorns is just propaganda for, for America? Yeah, you didn't get it? Yeah.
So anyway, no, I worked with Sam for a bit, and that actually helps. If you're going to work with a friend, it actually helps if you've worked with them before in some other setting. And so I got to work with Sam a bit, got to know him. He loves games as well. But he's also very good at communicating, and he's very comfortable with outreach and all those kinds of things that Justin and I don't want to do. And so so we invited him to join our team because we needed someone who can speak on our behalf, pretty much.
I talked about it all the time when we interview people. We had a III developer on early on in the show named Raphael Van Lierop, and he's working hard on a game right now, The Long Dark. And we asked him, you know, what was the most important thing about getting an indie game? Like, what's the most important thing? And he was like, social media and outreach and promotion. Because he said there's so many games out there that are probably going to be better than mine that you'll never hear about because they just don't have the right promotion. I expected Follow Your Heart. I expected all these, you know, one-liners. But he was like, no, dude, it comes down to promotion because people Twitter. Don't know about it. You know, you spent all this time making this game that no one could enjoy. So that's super important. Like, it's a huge member of the team. So people out there listening, you don't have to be a programmer. You don't have to be an artist. Even if you're good on social media or you're an interesting person, you could get a career in the gaming industry if you go to these game jams.
Yeah.
You go to these indie developer get-togethers. Just check Facebook, check Craigslist, do whatever you need to do. Look in the paper. Well, no one uses paper, but
no, everybody uses still paper. Yeah,
you can do it. Achieve your dreams, people.
Where can we find all the information for you guys and your game?
We're on Twitter at Nexer Software.
Mm-hmm.
Our website nexer.com, which needs to be updated.
Yeah.
And Facebook, facebook.com/Nexer Software.
We have a release date, right? If we're Armored Acorns. Excuse me.
No, we don't have
good
a
game.
Yeah, it is a good game, actually.
No, we don't have a solid release date, but very, very soon. We really want to get this thing out very, very soon.
Okay, all right.
So, you guys have the dopest names I've ever seen. We didn't even go through like the first and last names, but this has to go without saying. We have Sam Silva, which is the double S thing is dope. Like, that's
do you like
alliteration? It's like a fighter name or a superhero name.
Yeah,
exactly.
A Stan Lee character.
Paul DeLeon, like a gangster.
Wow.
It's a straight up like old-timey mobster name. Paul DeLeon.
Yeah.
It strikes fear into my heart.
I thought of that.
And then Justin Yamaguchi, the assassin.
Wow.
He's figure skating. Okay.
It's been a long time. It's been like 30 years. I think Yamaguchi, people still...
Oh, no, yeah, she's rain. She
that's the first thing Aaron said is when he walked in.
Yeah.
He,
oh, like Christina.
Oh, like Christina.
Yeah.
That's such an old reference. That's how you know Aaron is 50.
And she's hot. So, I mean,
black don't crack.
There it is.
You couldn't tell. He looks 20-something.
Thank you for listening, of course, to the Weekend Bang, everybody. If you aren't into the live show, you should be because we're about to get into the Armored Acorns and tear this thing apart.
yeah, we're going to shred it. Everything you heard here, we're going to go, oh, this game sucks.
So you got to head out to twitch.tv/videogame_bang. I say slash because I used to say what, backslash?
Yeah, I think you and screwed it up.
Yeah, and they used to just be like, oh, you're not backslash.
Well, thanks to the magic of VOD, too, we'll probably, you can catch up on our YouTube if you want to actually see the gameplay and stuff. And
yeah.
The VOD will stick around on our Twitch. Maybe I'll have Webb cut it out so you guys could see it because this is, you're going to want to see this.
And then thank you guys for coming on the show and being so open about everything.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thank you guys.
I really appreciate being here.
Thanks for chat. I know they probably didn't chime in as much as we can get to them, but I mean,
that's how it goes.
For Nextra Games, Corey Vincent, the real David Webb, I am Sir Aaron Carter saying you have just been banged by acorns.
Ouch.
Yeah.